Well, it's my great pleasure with that introduction to welcome into the studio Toby Edmonds for another edition of You Ought to Know. Welcome, Toby.
Good morning, Mike.
How are you today?
Just admiring the fluffy stuff that we got some more of last night and trying to mentally picture in my head exactly how I'm going to maneuver around this snow removal process at my shop.
Oh, well, it's been over the weekend, a little bit here, a little bit there. Not, you know, just enough to cover the old and make it look fresh, but also making snow removal, et cetera, interesting.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've had to struggle to find room to put snow at the shop. And I'm just now starting to kind of hit that point where I'm going, I wonder if I'm going to have to pay somebody to haul this out of here.
Oh, yes. Well, the city of Palmer does a wonderful job of placing things. And we've had discussions about that in terms of the bike lanes along roads are classically defined in winter to be snow dump storage.
Yeah, unfortunately.
And as we've had a change in how people like to get around, adding bikes to the cars and trucks and other things they've done, it's caused another kind of change that's happening. But, yep, maybe this is the last of the snow, or maybe it's going to keep on going for another
month. I think it's going to keep on going, unfortunately. Well, and I shouldn't say unfortunately, because it is pretty, and it is nice, and it is nice to have, you know, a somewhat regular Alaskan winter back.
Okay. Well, what kind of things are you thinking about for today?
Well, I was supposed to have somebody come in and be a guest speaker today. He had to cancel this morning. Well, he had to reschedule for next week. We had a weather-related issue for him. So he will have to be in next week. But so I figured we would continue our conversation. Actually, I had kind of an interesting fun fact that even I didn't know of kind of pop up over the weekend. And I did post it to our Facebook page in case anybody's interested. It's Edmonds Import Auto on Facebook.
Okay.
But it is, did you know that your headrest is designed to not only protect you in the event of an accident, but it's also designed to, I knew they came out.
Sure.
You know, you could remove them from the back of the seat.
Right.
But they're, you know, how they're pointed at the end on the posts. Well,
right.
They're designed. So like if you are in a situation which you need to escape out of the window of your vehicle, you can remove your headrest and use the post, the pointed end of the post, to give your side windows a good smack in the center, as long as you're from the inside and it's designed to actually break the window out.
Whoa.
Did not know that.
Okay, now, would you say that is a universal situation?
I would, actually, because, I've seen a lot of headrests, and I knew that windows, car windows, were designed to be broken out from the inside. I mean, you can quite easily actually break a window out from the inside, but you have to put in some, you know, pretty decent force to break it from the outside.
Because, and I wonder if that has to do with the convex, concave nature.
Exactly what it is. Yep. They're shaped like that for a reason. So that way, in the event of an accident, it is a lot easier for somebody to escape from the inside of the vehicle rather than break into the vehicle.
Oh.
But yeah, those posts in your headrest are designed to if you take the headrest out and give the glass a good smack, it's designed to break the window out. I had no idea.
Okay. Well, that's very good. And it, who knows, but that one bit of information may be very helpful for someone who's listening out there or reading the Facebook post. When you've brought up headrests then, and I know that the headrest situation has come up in our house a lot, and discussing one, ensuring that everyone has a headrest if you're riding. I know that these days, what had been long ago an integrated headrest, meaning a tall seat,
mm-hmm.
has now changed to allow for adjustment of headrests, certainly in the front. And then the question is, in the back seat, if the car is supposed to have a room for three people across the back, there should be three headrests. And I know they go up and down and so on. We like to adjust them. And I notice that headrests have some different kinds of designs. Some are, some, and in fact, some of them you can actually turn around in a reverse form that makes them seem more comfortable. But I'm wondering whether that reduces the safety aspect of a headrest.
You know, the headrest is part of a vehicle's passive safety features.
Mm-hmm.
So your seat belts, your airbags, headrests, those are all called passive safety features. And they're all designed to do is keep you in one place in the event of an accident. They're designed to limit the amount of movement you have in the vehicle during an accident.
Okay.
The thought behind it is, you know, not the thought, actually studies prove it, that as long as the occupant is held, you know, tightly in mm-hmm. one space, they're not going to flop around, you know, they're not going to be ejected out of the vehicle. I mean, I'm pretty sure that anybody who's gone through elementary school remembers the crash test safety dummies and all that. So, I mean, we're all pretty familiar with why we're supposed to wear seatbelts, but I think a lot of people do fail to remember that the headrest is part of that system, and it's designed to keep your head from snapping backwards during an accident. You know, there are a lot of vehicles, especially for people who are not quite so blessed in the height department.
Mm-hmm.
They will remove them because you're right. You know, depending upon the design that's in that particular vehicle, you know, they can kind of force the driver's head forward in kind of an odd position. So I have seen quite a few vehicles in which people have just opted to remove the headrest for various reasons altogether.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, like I said, it's people do fail to remember that those are part of the vehicle's passive safety features. So, you know, I'd say, obviously I'd have to check on this one just to make sure, cause I'm not an engineer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I'd say that as long as that headrest is there and is able to keep your head from, you know, snapping backwards in the event of an accident, I'd say that no matter really what position you had it in, as long as it, you know, the soft part was hitting you in the back of the head, I would say that it's still going to do its job.
So, that leads to the next question, driving along. I don't find myself usually, with modern vehicles, you can adjust the seat quite a bit. But I usually do not find myself driving with my head resting against the headrest. I occasionally do that, but I notice it. But I find that my usual driving position is not to have the head on the headrest. Is that something you're used to doing? What do you do?
No, I it's called a headrest, you know, and like I said, it's there really what its main job is a passive safety feature. And obviously, I mean, there are people that do drive with their heads resting on the headrest. I'm like you. I don't drive with my head up against the headrest.
Okay.
I don't like it. You know, I prefer to sit upright and you know, with my head supporting my own head.
Okay.
But, you know, I'd imagine that there are some people who do prefer, especially for long drives, prefer to have their headrest adjusted to where their head's actually resting on it.
So one of the other things that I've noted in the past, and I think it's still available feature, that you can, you can't turn off the airbag for the driver, but you can for the passenger.
On some vehicles, what most modern vehicles have gone towards, rather than actually being able, because there are some trucks mm-hmm. out there where you could insert the key into the dash and physically turn the passenger airbag off. And that was designed for when you had people in there that were too lightweight or too short mm-hmm. to where the airbag actually became a danger to them. So mm-hmm. that way you could shut it off in the event that you had like a child riding in the front seat or somebody who is of smaller stature sitting in that front seat. What most companies have actually elected to go for now, instead of having that ability to manually shut it off, is there's sensors, weight sensors in the seats now that can detect when somebody is of proper size sitting in that seat. And then as the vehicle is turned on and takes that person's weight and all those different measurements, it will turn the passenger seat belt on. I mean, the passenger airbag on. Now, when there's nobody sitting in that seat, or if there's somebody in the seat, but it's kind of lightweight, it will shut it off by itself.
Oh, very interesting. Thank you. That's good information. Well, since we're talking about airbags, the Takata company in Japan, which produced airbags for a lot of different vehicles.
Yes.
Had been in the news over a number of years because of not a failure of every one of their airbags, but a certain number of them, enough to cause them considerable pain, and pain in some cases in vehicles. Have you come across any issues associated with Takata airbags?
I have not, just because I believe that, I mean, if it's a recall, so it's being handled through Takata, and of course, any sort of campaign or recall that is issued through the manufacturer will actually be performed through the dealer, because
sure,
that's
right.
How campaigns and recalls work. It's something that has to be done by the or the dealer. So, you know, my shop has not. The airbag issues that we have seen come in are, you know, pretty normal stuff. Like in the Volkswagens and Audis and Mercedes, because the wiring for the airbags go underneath the seat in a lot of vehicles.
Okay.
So one of their favorite tricks is that if the for some odd reason, if the wiring becomes kind of loose or it starts to move around, they like to wedge themselves in the seat tracks. So as people move the seat back and forth, it damages the wiring.
Okay.
So, you know, we see a lot of that. You know, but really, as far as airbags go, I mean, you do see the problems, but really, compared to a lot of the other stuff that we deal with on an everyday basis, it's pretty few and far between.
Okay. So one of the other things that, of course, we have available is a seatbelt arrangement. And as I understand, in the state of Alaska, you must wear your seatbelt.
Mm-hmm.
And that is if you are a driver or a passenger. And way back in the day, I remember having a 1960s vintage Volvo, a vehicle that came early on with seatbelts, three-point seatbelts. But I remember before that, actually installing seatbelts in some cases because the vehicles did not have them.
Right.
And I would aftermarket them and so on. So today, there seemed to be a range of different seatbelts. I remember a seatbelt on some vehicles, might have been, remember the make, where when you got in and opened the door, the seatbelt had a track across the top, and it retracted. And when you closed the door, it sort of automatically came down. So you didn't have to actually look for the place in which you were going to pick it, put it in.
There were actually quite a few manufacturers. The majority of them hit in the 90s.
Right.
There were a couple that did it before that and a couple that still continued it into the early 2000s. But the majority of the manufacturers played with that type of a system in the 90s. So Volkswagen was one, Honda, Toyota. I mean, there was quite a few of them that played with. Ford actually had some in their Tempos are the ones that I remember.
Right.
A lot of companies moved away from that because they were kind of problematic. They were kind of a pain. So
they were almost eerie, but that's okay.
they retract, and when they didn't work. I mean, because a safety belt is a safety feature. So when you have a system like that, you know, if something were to happen to it, or if somebody were to jam it up, or if the little track got jammed up, then that person was unable to use their seatbelt. You know, so.
Sure.
It was a lot more reliable to just keep it all contained in the vehicle. And then, of course, the occupant would be responsible for buckling themselves in.
And some vehicles seem to have buckles that are more easily buckled than others. There's a kind of a similarity in design across the way. But do you notice anything, for example, from the lower cost vehicles to the top end? You can pay $20,000, pay $100,000 for a vehicle. Are seatbelt connectors, buckling apparatus, much better when you go up?
No.
That's kind of interesting to me that you have a vehicle which has got so much more, and whether it's a sound system and the seats and everything else, but the seatbelt system is.
See, here's the thing is because seatbelts are so regulated, because they are something that is monitored and required by, you know, various government agencies. In fact, I would be willing to place a large pile of money on the fact that most manufacturers probably don't even manufacture their own seatbelts. That's something that, like Takata, you know, or they'll go to, you know, independent companies, or they would partner with a company to manufacture their seatbelts. So companies that specialize just in making a seatbelt. And I think it would probably just because they are so regulated that it's, if really what at that point in time when you're discussing how difficult it is to buckle in a seatbelt, be willing to say, because you know how it's in drivers and passenger seats, it's generally not too bad. But like when you start getting into the back seats and where the manufacturers replace the receiver for the seatbelt, and how far down in the seat cushions they place them, and that's really more the bane of my existence lots of times with seatbelts.
Sure.
Is, you know, rooting around in the back trying to figure out where they place the darn thing. And
is there in your experience, is there any vehicle that really has a wonderful, easy to use buckling system?
I can't think of any off the top of my head. I think it's more kind of I'm currently driving a Tiguan, and I've thoroughly enjoyed the seatbelt placement in there because they make the receivers. I mean, obviously the actual seatbelt portion is, you know, pretty standard, but they make the receivers, they seem to be a lot longer than what normally comes in a vehicle. So they stand
stock.
Exactly. So they're very easy to find when you're fumbling around in the dark, or, you know, you got your hands full of coffee and bags and first thing in the morning, you're trying to get everything situated. They're a lot easier to find. I can't think of any off the top of my head as far as which ones are easier and which ones are more problematic. But I can say this, anytime that I have to flop the back seat down on any vehicle, trying to align all those receivers back up, trying to get them in the proper holes, that's more of my concern with seatbelts.
Right. So listeners may share that experience. I'm sure they have.
Oh, I'm sure.
There's another part to it. We've been focused our attention on the place where we're buckling these things together. But over in the other side, there's this little place into which the seatbelt retracts most of the time. But sometime, and particularly over years, the retraction seems to become less and less definite.
Snappy.
Yes. So how easy is it to fix that?
It kind of depends upon the vehicle. Some are easier to get to than most. I'm sure you've already guessed that when you do have to replace a seatbelt, pretty much a good portion of the interior of the vehicle has to come out. All of the trim for the B pillar has to come out. And the B pillar is the pillar that is located right next to your head as you're sitting in the driver's or the passenger seat.
Okay.
So all those trim pieces have to come out because the seatbelt and the seatbelt tensioner are located down, for generalization's sake, around the bottom, like off to the side of the bottom of the seat. All modern vehicles, when you have an issue in which the tensioner or the retractor does start to kind of wear out, you have retraction problems or even pyrotechnic problems because they seat belts are designed, they have like a small in modern vehicles, they have a small explosive charge in them that is designed to detonate in the event of an accident.
Wow. So it's, I didn't know that.
Yes. And what it does is say you have an airbag or a seatbelt light that it comes on in your instrument cluster and stays on even though you've, you know, actually buckled your seatbelt in. Chances are you have a problem with an airbag or a seatbelt, and you do. There are sensors that monitor those charges, and so if you are in an accident and that charge does detonate, then as part of the reconstruction of the vehicle, if your insurance company or if you elect to pay for it, reconstructs the vehicle, you have to replace that seatbelt because that seatbelt is no good anymore. It's locked up, will not work. Even if it doesn't, even if there's nobody in that seat with that seatbelt, sometimes that charge will still detonate. And what it does is it's designed to really tighten the seatbelt down really fast.
Oh, okay. Not to break it away, but to tighten it.
Yep, to tighten it. And so that way that seatbelt will lock down on you and hold you in one place in the event of an accident. But as you were talking about the tensioner, seatbelts, they are not, because of what they are and because, like we talked about, they're highly regulated, they're what's called a non-serviceable part.
Oh,
which
okay.
means that if the tensioner stops working, if it gets too jammed to where we can't get it to unjam, or if that charge does detonate, the entire assembly needs to be replaced.
That's interesting information. I sort of knew that in an accident, but you've given the fine detail, which helps to understand what's going on. So a related question I've wondered about is the question of, is there any aftermarket? I know if someone were to be driving their vehicle in a racing situation, you would likely not utilize the standard seatbelt configuration.
Right, you'd probably go with more of a harness
type of thing. Do any people aftermarket harnesses when just driving around because they're concerned about being best protected?
No, because they're kind of a pain to put on and off.
Okay.
Plus they are expensive.
Okay.
Because it's not just modifying the seatbelt, you have all the attachment points and generally
right.
you have to replace the seat as well. That would be a question that I would probably have to ask some of my racing friends. But just with my familiarity with them, I would be willing to bet that most people are not willing to put up with that type of a setup just because of it can be kind of cumbersome. It is a little uncomfortable. So most people would probably just prefer to stick with the regular type of seatbelt for everyday driving.
Sure, sure. Okay. I guess I'm with that idea, I'm thinking, although there may be some hidden developments in seatbelt design that have occurred over the last decade, it's roughly the same kind of design. And as vehicles move on into the future, I'm wondering if at some point there will be a modernization of seatbelt design that somehow allows you to be able to move reasonably well, but does an even better job of protecting.
Possibly, you're definitely right. I mean, as the actual design, the actual concept, as far as the average occupant can tell, you're right. The seatbelt hasn't really changed a whole bunch. You have the shoulder portion, you have the lap portion. It buckles into one receiver.
Right.
It's more the changes and the development and how the vehicle and how the seatbelt retracts, how it tensions, how easily, because, when your seatbelt twists up, don't just, pass it off as, oh, well, it's just a little twisted back there. And no, because it will actually jam up your seatbelt retractor itself and it can cause problems. So, and like we talked about with the pyrotechnic charge, which, by the way, it makes it very interesting trying to get them shipped up here to the state of Alaska because it is a hazmat item.
Oh, okay.
So I think that's where you're probably going to see a lot of the technological developments as far as seatbelts goes. If I had to guess, I'd say over the years, probably what you're going to see the most changes in is in how airbags work with the vehicle and where they're placed. I mean, most vehicles have side curtain airbags now. Of course, there's the airbags in the steering wheel, in the dash. There's airbags that come out from the side of the seat. I think that's probably where you're going to see a large portion of your changes in the next years is probably in the actual airbags themselves, not so much the seatbelts. Because as you noted, people, they don't like their movement,
restricted
yeah. while driving too. So, I think manufacturers, for the most part, are going to be kind of limited into what type of improvements they can make in the seatbelt design just because they don't want to restrict people's movements.
Okay. Well, Toby, we have managed to go through another edition of You Ought to Know. Any last comments before we finish up here?
Well, as the temperature fluctuates and we continue to get a lot of that white stuff out on the roads out there, just to once again like to remind people to drive safely, give yourself plenty of stopping distance, and watch your car, you know, watch your fluids, watch how it starts in the morning, listen to it. If you notice a problem that happens with your vehicle first thing in the morning, don't dismiss it as it gets, you know, as the temperatures fluctuate and gets warmer. It could be the early warning sign of a further problem. Always, you know, have your technician check it out. Prevent yourself some serious cash either further on down the road or some serious stress by having to deal with a vehicle that broke down on you.
Okay. Well, thank you. Toby Edmonds from Edmonds Auto with another edition of You Ought to Know.
Thank you, Mike.
Talk to you next week.